Greetings, Meltopians. Are you looking to delve deeper into the world of Meltopia? Then check out our Patreon, where you can find written mythos pieces, world maps, found footage, art, Patreon-exclusive shows, and more. Just go to patreon.com/Meltopia and join one of our tiers for access to great new content. Brave the forbidden and embrace the darkness.
Antonia was already far from the city of dead witches and deep into the rambling wood that crowned the high hills to the south when she heard a phone ringing. The sound was all the louder from where she piloted her killing pool through one of the overflowing creeks that veined the autumnal landscape. Cautiously, she emerged from the water, her shape becoming human. The phone sat on a large flat rock next to a thin finger of pouring water that emerged from a hole within a climbing expanse of limestone. It certainly seemed like a phone, even though it was embellished with quite a bit of additional hardware. Wires and antenna, a flat bit of metal housing a tiny circuit board, far more than one would expect from a typical intranet cellular device. Perhaps the additional accoutrements were needed for it to transmit so far outside the range of a municipal intranet. She hesitated for a moment before picking it up. Activating the speakerphone, she held the thing as far away from herself as she could, as if expecting it to explode. She said nothing, but only listened. There were a few seconds of silence before a voice sounded from the thing.
Greetings, Antonia.
Hello. What can I do for you?
She decided to do away with her other, less pressing questions. How did you know where to find me? How do you know my name? The theatrics concerning the placement of the phone indicated the speaker's desire to seem clever and mysterious. She wouldn't give them the satisfaction of her curiosity.
I wanted to tell you a few things, improve your grasp of the moment, a very crucial moment for so many.
Then tell me. Pearls before swine, is that what you mean?
More like pearls before Neanderthal. Really, you should give yourself more credit. Although, upon further examination, you may indeed have more in common with pigs than human precursors. You see, if certain religions are to be believed, animals have no souls, and neither do you. The poor Neanderthal, based upon his overall shape and powers of reason, just might be begrudged a soul.
No soul, you say? The nether mechanical understanding of such a thing allows for its manipulation, provided a symmetry bridge can be maintained, and therefore allow an ensouled system continued function. I suspect you meant to say that my soul has been displaced, correct?
Clever. Very clever indeed. And yes, you are correct. But in this case, the symmetry bridge consists of a nether analog, a sort of changeling soul, whereby it facilitates the transfer of information between the primary spirit and itself, thus where your power originates. Also, and most important, the Nether analog is unstable. Once the simulacrum has been integrated with the biologics of the body, which has its primary connections within the host framework, permutations will inevitably result. It is here that the machine must be careful, as this stage of development is chaotic, and must be carefully managed to obtain the desired result.
And pray tell, what is the desired result?
Why, the logic embedded within the changeling soul would be allowed to spread and take root, reproduce itself.
But all the spawn of the Melanjine are reborn sterile.
And here lies the limit of your understanding. Although to your credit, you've managed more than I'd expected, and exceeding my expectations is no mean feat, I can assure you.
I'm flattered. Now, continue with your lesson, Sensei. How does the changeling soul spread?
The way in which anything propagates, it is nourished.
You didn't arrange this meeting just to impress me with your acumen. What do you want from me?
In addition to your current errand, tell your king this. I can help in his bid against the machine for the benefit of all. All he need do is stop by after he's finished with his little battle. We'll all be waiting in Deadwitch. Ta.
The phone went dead. Antonia screwed up her face at the device before tossing it into the darkness. She gathered the information she'd just been supplied, if any of it was indeed at all valuable, and heaped it into the back of her mind. After slipping back into her killing pool, she thought on what the voice had said, that she didn't have a soul. She assembled the verbose speaker's message into a vision of her truth, wherein she gazed into the mephitic pit of a burning wasteland, her dim blue soul languishing for lack of mind and body, expressing only misery and pain in their respective turns. She followed upward the thin, gleaming tether that unwound from the thing. At some point it became red and coarse as it traveled through the stone and darkness of the deep earth. Eventually it entered her body, passing effortlessly the gates of her flesh, a feeding tube for the changeling soul burning within her. Her view closed on the thing's face. It looked back at her with blackest eyes, smiling victoriously. The house that was once his home was destroyed. It seemed more like it had fallen over from despair, finding its endeavor as hopeless as it was pointless. The fire and smoke that rose from its ruptured body merely the pretext it employed to finally give up. Despite the small inferno that now engulfed the structure, Hazel was seated upon the front steps. Keith casually walked up to her and placed a foot upon the bottom step, carefully weighing his words before speaking them, the fire all but forgotten. She looked up at him, staring into his eyes with all the sadness of a broken doll. And then she burst out laughing. The act was contagious, and both giggled at the fire, at what their lives had become, at the ridiculousness of it all. After they caught their breaths, Keith looked back into her eyes as he helped her up, smiling like the dawn, dispelling whatever darkness the moment still contained.
I don't know how I even got here,
the regressor said, rubbing her temples. What a perfect epitaph for the passengers as a whole, I think. They both chuckled again.
I just woke up here, found the place like this.
We were attacked by William's gang. Suffice to say, he's only begun to regret it. He's with Lynn and Cromwell now. They're taking him back to his clubhouse on Devon Street to talk. Lynn sent me back to find you and Mars.
You're the only one I've seen since I woke up. But just give me a second, and I'll sort this shit out.
Hazel turned towards the fire and leveled a deep stare. Slowly, the house seemed to inhale the smoke and flames, reclaiming them within itself, all while lurching back up upon its worried foundation. Within moments, the house was back to normal, such as it was, and yet she continued to stare, moving her head away from the house and into the nearby woods, as if watching something.
Looks like Mars snuck out of the back door quite a while ago and headed west into the woods.
Isn't that the direction the thing took off in?
Sure is.
He certainly chose a bad time to slip out for a bite to eat. Keith bemoaned while Hazel turned back towards the house, apparently observing something else.
Looks like they took Lynn and me out by force. Some weird electricity guy walked me right out, apparently. Must have had an effect on my memory. I wonder how I slipped him.
Hazel said, offering a shrug.
Will the house come back down after your chicanery wears off?
Keith asked, walking closer, inspecting it.
No, it's good as new. It's just wood and stone. That sort of stuff doesn't have any pullback. Well, not unless it's got some kind of deeper connection to other things.
Fascinating, Keith murmured as he ran his hand along the side of the house, where once there had only been fire and ruin. You really must bore me with the details of your time manipulation.
Hazel just smirked, dodging the request with a question.
Where to next, you think? Into the woods or off to Devon Street?
Keith furrowed his brow at the question, thinking.
Well, we might want to reinforce our presence at the Wanderer's HQ, as it were. Not that I think we're particularly needed, mind you. I can't see Cromwell losing a fight, ever. And, well, Lynn.
Yeah, she scares me too.
They were silent for a moment after dropping her name, as if they'd revived a taboo topic. Keith whispered to Hazel within a solitary channel of sound, assuring its secrecy.
Slowly move into the house, as if you've forgotten something. I think we've an uninvited guest. Such things seem to be absolutely thick this evening.
As Hazel vanished behind the front door of the house, Keith turned upon his heel and faced the other side of the street. He bowed low, but kept his face visible throughout, allowing his devilish smile to remain visible.
Why, hello there,
Keith said, his last two words exploding into the air. Always one for precision, the devastation was channeled cleanly at his target, conserving every last note of his auditory assault. A lumbering mechanical monstrosity shimmered into view, its cloaking field falling before the conductor's spoken strength. The thing tried to stand against the waves of sound buffeting it as surely as a ship caught in a maelstrom, but Keith continued his assault, speaking devastation as he strolled forward, hands clasped casually behind his back.
Did you think I didn't notice you there, Wanderer, walking behind the light, guns drawn? Why, I can hear a wasp stinger slide through the membrane of a moth's wing a mile distant. And you thought to surprise me.
The stumbling mechanoid finally turned away from the sonic assault and tried to rocket away into the sky. But Keith kept talking.
You didn't know it's terribly rude to leave in the middle of a conversation, as if you haven't already been rude enough.
A handful of yards in the air, the sound of the machine thing's thrusters rose to an incredible volume before exploding. The mechanoid was sent tumbling and smoking back to the cracked street, landing with a thud. Keith was relentless.
You and yours have been intolerably troublesome this evening. And for what? Because we chose not to join your little club, to prostrate ourselves before you.
Keith's words were like a ravening pack of wolves, tearing the creature apart where it writhed upon the pavement.
Please, I yield!
The monster cried, its voice crackling artificially through unseen speakers. Keith detonated the creature's words, blowing a massive hole through the thing's chest cavity. Fire, sparks, and smoke lifted from the steel wound as Keith approached the helpless monster.
I wonder how merciful you might have been had I or my lovely friend over there been caught unawares by you.
Ever at its deadly work, The conductor's speech tore wire from circuit from servo until the creature was laid bare to the flesh beneath its steel exterior. Keith looked down upon the thing that lurked the hollows of the metal contraption. A hugely obese man within a smooth basin of stainless steel, his eyes like saucers as he stared up at the passenger. And there we have it. The slug caught beneath the sun. Terrifying, is it not? To meet the world naked, trembling at the dawn, with neither tooth nor claw to avail you. We are now very well met, Wanderer. What say you?
I was just doing as I was told, that's all. But please, I wasn't going to kill anyone. I was just going to bring you back to the big man. That's all. I swear to God, that's all I was going to do.
Following orders. My least favorite excuse. The exculpation of cowards and weak wills. A man is revealed for true only when death is afoot. And here you are. A whimpering man-child. Fortunately for you, I would never harm a child.
Keith turned back towards his home upon Lineage Street, nodding at Hazel where she looked on.
And you don't follow orders, tough guy? You don't do the company's bidding? You don't ask how high when Spider says jump?
Keith turned back for only a moment to smile his response at the defenseless man.
I do not follow orders, Wanderer. I humor them.
Adrian and Greth led the frothing legions through the white wasteland, the coldest wind nothing but a weak whisper rising to the inferno of their collective appetite. Some of the creatures that followed them, a motley of hellish shapes that towered over the landscape, snapped at the falling snow, hoping in vain to find some semblance of sustenance to stem the unbearable pain gnawing at their guts, a supernatural hunger demanding worlds of flesh. But the two had traveled this way many times, when they were men, and knew well what dwelt over the next rise, the town of Kreese, a small burg of rugged men and women, all of whom felt themselves a match for the worst the elements could throw at them. Tonight, that resistance would be tested. The sight of the city sent the monsters into a mad dash, heedless of consequence. The former Oversapiens could have stopped them. The command they'd been granted over them was absolute, but they were hungry too. The city would also supply the Wara, those monsters who had not yet coupled with a human mind, the opportunity to improve their condition, become fully monstrous. The place would provide shelter for them, basements and other potential layers to swell and grow before reaching their final destination. The rapacious Carnivian tore through the city like a gas-fueled inferno. Wood and stone structures built to refuse winter's greatest fury became airborne debris. The largest of houses seemed no more than shellfish to the monsters, just a brief barrier to the meat residing within. The attack was so fast and merciless, the population barely had enough time to inhale, let alone scream. In short order, the city of Kreese was a wide and wet banquet that stretched into the deepening night. Abominations grasped tightly within their claws and pincers and other assorted clutches the prey they'd snatched from beneath rooftops and pried from hidey holes. The cold air filled with the sounds of countless maws and mandibles working voraciously to extract meat and grind bone. Adrian prowled the decimated lanes of the town, inspecting the health of his throngs of inhuman things, bearing multiple rows of fangs at those beasts who'd taken more than their share. He gathered all the germinating Wara into the center of his demonic army, affording them shelter for the completion of their metamorphosis. Greth met him in the city square. Adrian turned his face into the wind, his wide nostrils testing the air. Greth growled irritably, communicating his restlessness.
"It will not be long now, brother," Adrian said, his silver eyes shimmering against the dark. "The Lost Kingdom is not far. Not far at all."